Bienvenidos to our latest edition of Corazón Bilingüe. Join us as we explore the dynamics of language, culture, and the art of poetry. I'm your host, Brenda Nettles Rojas. Con este programa, exploramos la dinámica del lenguaje, la cultura, y la creación poética, sometimes in English y a veces en español. Our program fluctuates between English and Spanish. We are here today with writer Diana Lopez, who is joining us via a telephone interview from Victoria, Texas. Thank you for joining us, Diana.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Diana, you have several books out and several short stories. You have a busy writing life. Tell us a little bit about your latest novel.
My latest novel is called Choke, and it's a novel written for young adults. I got the idea for the book from the students I used to teach. For about 9 years, I taught middle school, and 1 year, I had some girls come to class, and they had bloodshot eyes, and so naturally, I thought they were smoking pot in the restroom. So I called them out to the hallway and asked them why their eyes were like that. And it turned out that they were playing the choking game, which is something I had never heard about. But apparently, they were choking each other to pass out. And it was kind of a way of achieving a temporary high. And this I found very disturbing. I sent them to the nurse's office and things like that. But what was most disturbing, the act itself is disturbing, but what bothered me most was their attitude toward this game. They didn't think it was dangerous, even though they were there with their eyes bloodshot, And so recently the CDC published a report about the choking game. And once the CDC published that report, there was a lot of media attention given to it. It was featured on news shows like CNN and Fox News, Dateline, 2020, and even the crime drama, Criminal Minds.
Mm-hmm.
I had an episode about it. And that's what brought this memory back to me. But one of the things I noticed was that all these shows were targeting adults, and this was an activity that teenagers were doing. So I felt really compelled to write a book that would address teenagers and kind of explore why they were doing this. And I hate to say it's a game about a book about the choking game. That is a feature in the book, but it's really about a friendship and motivations behind young people doing things that they should not do. And a lot of times it's peer pressure, So that's a little bit about that book.
Well, it definitely covers a very serious issue for young adults. And how is it being received?
It came out in the summer, and I was so excited. It got a review in the New York Times, which just thrilled me to death.
Congratulations.
And so, I was so excited about that. And I've been hearing recently, I've started hearing from readers. Sometimes it takes a while before you start hearing from them, it takes a while for them to get the book. But I've had a few readers contact me via email and thank me for the book. And one of the most poignant letters I got was from a parent who was given the book by her daughter's school librarian. And her daughter's in the sixth grade. And apparently she had lost a son to the choking game.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she read the book and she wrote me, and she thanked me for writing a book that she felt comfortable giving to her sixth grader as a way of opening the dialogue. And I just started crying when I read that letter, because I was really kind of worried about how people who have personal experience with this would feel about the book, So I found it very satisfying to hear from her, but also sad that she had that personal experience.
Well, as a writer, one never knows how the work is going to impact people, do you?
That's true. You never know. And like all art, some people respond very positively, and some people can't get past the first 20 pages. there's so many tastes, and you can't appeal to everybody. All you can do is try your best to be true to the story and the characters that are in it.
Right. Well, as you mentioned, Choke is a young adult novel for a considered middle-aged fiction, isn't it?
Yes, it's categorized for ages 12 and up, but the characters are in middle school.
But your first novel was an adult novella, Sophia Saints.
That's right. My first book was called Sophia Saints, and that book takes place in Corpus Christi, and it's a story of a wood-burning artist who finds that she has to kind of confront or compromise her views of her art when she discovers that she's going to have to leave her house. Mm-hmm. And it's got a lot of other stories in there, but that's the reason behind the title. She sees saints in the wood, and so she draws them with her pyroelectric pen. I don't know if you're familiar with wood burning, but they kind of burn an image into the wood, and in the grain of the wood, she sees saints, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay. So she's always drawing these. And she really believes that she's not really imposing an image on the wood. She really believes that the images are there. But they're not very popular. It's not something that she can sell and really make money out of. And then when she finds herself needing money, she starts questioning whether she should change her artistic views.
Right.
I think something that a lot of people struggle with, you know.
Right. Well, writing for both adults and young adults brings us to the conversation of audience and the writing approach.
Right. And it, you know, it's kind of interesting because I write for both audiences. I think for me, the primary difference is it seems to me like the stories come from different emotional places.
Mm-hmm.
And like I guess there's like emotional landscapes that people, you know, live in. And, you know, I had a really wonderful childhood, you know. I mean, I had the same problems everybody else had, but I have to say that I, for the most part, really enjoyed my childhood and my experiences. And so that's just a very warm place for me and kind of a light place. And then when I left the home, and, you know, my mother used to always tell me, just wait till you get to the real world. She was always telling me that. And I remember thinking, well, what world am I in now? You know, I mean, I thought this was the real world. Well, when I left the home and started working, you know, I started realizing, oh, now I know, you know, I know what she means by the real world now. And, you know, I just kind of, I developed this cynicism, and, you know, I was so disappointed, I guess, by adulthood. I thought it was going to be this big liberating thing. And it wasn't. And I just became kind of dark about things. And so I wanted to get what I call like the magic of childhood back. And a lot of that journey, I think, is in my first book, Sophia Saint. And in my fiction, that's kind of what I'm doing. It's like I'm trying to recapture what it was like back then. And that really does play a big role in my young adult book. In my adult books, the emotional landscape is a little darker than it is for my light young story.
Right.
That's when I was experiencing those emotions. But I'm very curious now, you know, I've kind of entered this other stage of life where, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, and it's a different place in life. I'm very comfortable with myself, and I think I've managed to reconcile those two emotional landscapes. So I'm very interested to see how that's going to play into my writing.
Absolutely. Well, let's hear a bit of, I think you're going to read to us from your book, Choke.
Yes, I'm going to read a short excerpt from my book, Choke. And just to give you some context, in the book, my main character's name is Wendy. Not Wendy, Wendy, like it's windy outside, because her dad's a meteorologist.
Oh, okay.
It was windy on the day she was born. And anyway, she's with a friend named Nina, and Nina's like one of those kids in the school who's very influential and is kind of like the leader of the pack kind of girl. And Nina's also the one who introduces the other characters to the choking game. And in this scene, she's with Wendy, and they're in the restroom at Dillard's at the mall, and Nina has just convinced Wendy to play the game, and so I just want to read a little bit about them there.
Okay.
So Nina smiles at me and says, just remember, you can tap out whenever you want. Okay, I said. Nina approached me, and I felt a little sick, like before a presentation and speech class, but I really wanted to do this, so I took a deep breath and nodded to give her the okay. She pressed her hands on both sides of my neck and started to squeeze. Just a little at first, but when I didn't stop her, she squeezed tighter. I smelled the perfume on her wrist again, but since it'd been there for a while, it seemed sour now. Then I felt her breath, a light breeze, and I liked it. Liked being close to her, even if it meant playing this weird game. Then she squeezed my neck even tighter. It didn't hurt, but I felt pressure in my head, like when I used to hang upside down on the monkey bars too long. Then the pressure started to balloon, especially behind my eyes. Was my head going to explode? Because that's how it felt. I started to panic. Let go, I tried to say, but I couldn't because my voice was choked off too. Then a bunch of green dots appeared. I knew I'd faint if I didn't tap out, so I slapped at Nina's forearms, and immediately she let go, just like she promised. And there's a little taste of what the characters are doing in the book.
Oh my goodness. It's
Yeah. That paragraph, I like to read that paragraph aloud because of all the paragraphs in the book, that was the hardest paragraph to write.
Well, and it's quite really impactful.
Was. Yeah, and I think, you know, the challenge of writing a book like this is you want to show the appeal of something like this, but you are writing to young people, so you don't want to glorify it in any kind of way. And so it was a challenge, but, you know, after many revisions, I realized if I focus on the interior dialogue that the character's having with herself, and there's a lot of build-up to that before the scene where she's weighing the pros and cons of doing this,
right.
And that goes on throughout the book. I thought that would be the best way to approach it, where I can get both the dangers in there and the appeal, but not in a way where, you know, the last thing I want is for kids to play this game. So
right.
The book really is an anti-choking game book, but I do want to explore why they would do it in the first place.
Right. Well, I mean, just the name, just that they're calling it a game is quite shocking.
Yes, it is. And that's actually what they call it. They have quite a few different names for it, but it's most widely known as a choking game.
Oh. Well, let's talk a little bit about language. We're always talking about language on the program. And we talked a little bit about audience, but language also plays in, and the language you choose for an adult audience is going to be quite different than the language you choose for a younger audience.
That's true. And, you know, it's interesting you bring that up because I just wrote an article for Writer's Digest that's called Get a Voice List, you know, and it's advice for writers of teen books, and it's about how to sound like a teen, you know? I mean, it's how to sound like a teen when you're not a teen anymore. And a lot of times I think people think that it has to do with, like, using a simpler vocabulary, but that really isn't exactly how you achieve that teen voice. You really have to kind of get back into the psychology of the way that teens think, you know? And you have to, I think part of the most important thing to remember is that for them, experiences are happening for the first time. For example, I'm a teacher. I've been standing in front of classrooms teaching for, you know, 20 years. And, you know, when you're in front of a classroom, embarrassing stuff happens. Sometimes
right.
The buttons on your shirt, you know, pop open or your zipper, you know, things like that.
Right.
And at this time, those things don't really faze me. You know, I'm just like, well, this has happened like a zillion times. You know, I'll just turn around. But, you know, when you're a kid and you're walking around and your button pops open, that's just, like, mortifying. And so the emotional quality, the emotions are so much more intense, I think, because you don't have that sense of everything's going to be okay. You think everything is exaggerated. So I think that when you're talking about language, at least for me when I'm writing for young people, it tends to be like a really heightened kind of sense of the emotional quality of things. I'm not saying that's absent in adult books, but adults they're more experienced, so they kind of have a lot of the calmer sense of things and maybe a cynicism sometimes that is sometimes lacking in a young adult book.
Right, so the language is tuned differently, as you said.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I mean, there's other things too, like I think teens also, because they're not adjusted to the world, really see the absurdity of things, and they really question, you know, like, why do we do this? Whereas adults just kind of, they stopped those questions long ago, and they just kind of accept it.
Mm.
So one thing I really love about talking to young people is they'll bring up things that I just take for granted, and, I mean, it'll be like procedural things, you know, why do we do it this way? And you start thinking, you know, you're right. Why do we do it this way? And And I like capturing that in my stories too, and letting them speak about some of the ridiculous things that go on in the world.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the genesis of a story. Where does the story start for you? Yeah, where does the story start for you?
Well, for me, it starts with a voice. I think I spend most of the time searching for the voice of the story. What is it? I think once you understand or you hear, it's not really understanding, but once you hear the voice, you can start writing. And it can take, for me at least, a long time to find that voice, you know? A lot of times, too, there's an image that I just can't get rid of. In Sophia's Saints, I have this image of these wood burnings, you know, and I couldn't get rid of that image, and I wanted to kind of explore what those images meant to me, you know. And in my first young adult book, Confetti Girl, I have this image of this man. I actually started with the father character, you know, I have this image of this man just always reading books and hiding behind his books, and what was wrong with him? I mean, I love to read, but, you know, like to the exclusion of other things. I'm not that kind of reader, and so there's like a mystery there. So that is a huge part of it. But I will say, as far as the writing process goes, once I get a sense of who my character is, I usually have a pretty good sense of the first chapter and like the last scene. But I don't know anything in the middle, you know. I kind of write blind in the middle, and I like that. I don't like to map out my stories, because once I map out a story, I don't really have a reason to write it.
So it's almost like you're going on a journey with your story.
Exactly. I mean, that's how we read books anyway, you know, because we want to go on that journey. And it's a process of discovery. So if you map out the story, there's nothing left to discover. I did that with one story. I said, because everybody kept telling me about outlining, I did that with one story and I never wrote it. So I was like, well, I have no interest in it anymore. So, and I know that process works really good for some people. It just doesn't work for me.
Right. Well, Diana, you're a writer, an avid writer, but you're also an editor. You're editing currently the literary journal Wisace.
Yes, and I'm very proud of this literary journal. It is a project of an organization that I work with called Central Victoria, and we're based at the University of Houston, Victoria. And we call the journal Wisace. It's because of the Texas tree that is kind of like a shrub tree. It's not a very tall, grand tree. And in the spring, it has these beautiful gold blooms. But people don't go buy it at the nursery. People don't deliberately plant it. It's just one of those trees that, you know, it's kind of like a mesquite tree. It's always around. And actually, a lot of people try to get rid of the tree, you know. They think of it as like a trash tree, or, you know, it's not a pretty tree. So I thought that it was a great metaphor for the type of works that we wanted to publish in the book, because what we're trying to do in the journal is give voice to writers who are like the Wisace, you know. They're beautiful, but they're not really, no one pays attention to them,
right.
You know. And they get ignored, and that really was our mission in the journal. And so we have two issues. We published our second issue just a couple of months ago, and it's got poetry by Lorna D. Cervantes and Naomi Shihab Nye, and it's got prose by Michelle Settles and Gary Soto, and it's got some beautiful photography by Chuy Benitez, and our cover art is by Patsy Valdez. And it's really been a pleasure working on it and, you know, discovering new voices and giving a place to feature, you know, some of our established voices too.
Well, and tell me about your role as an editor, because, I mean, the writing and editing life are a little different.
They are different, and I was scared of it at first because, you know, I like to read interviews with writers, and a lot of writers who go into the editing business feel like it kills their writing, because it is a different cat when you're writing the part, you know, if you were to light up your brain,
right.
Part of your brains are activated when you're writing. A different part of your brain is activated when you're editing, and it's more, I think it's more technical, it's more critical and judgmental than the creative side, you know. And I was a little bit worried about that, but actually I found that it feeds my writing just to be part of this literary world and to have these conversations about stories and about poems gets me excited about my own writing. And in much the same way that, you know, I think the same thing happens with teaching. Sometimes people feel like when they're teaching, it kills their creativity. You know, they're so tired, or they have to read so many essays that they get really overburdened with that type of thinking. But for me, it really feeds me. You know, I love talking to the students, and yeah, you have to have that critical side, but it helps you have a critical side about yourself too.
Right.
So I'm enjoying the process a lot. It's been very rewarding.
So it's motivating and inspiring your own work. Excellent.
Yes. Yeah, and I read a poem or a story. Oh, this is so good! I want to do something like this, you know. And so it tells me to get to work, you know.
Right.
It's kind of like a coach in a way.
So, what advice do you have to writers who want to submit their work?
Well, and I think my advice is what most editors' advice is. You know, before doing that, work and polish your piece. You know, make it as polished and as high quality as you can make it, but also get a copy of the journal, you know, and look at what's in there to see if it's a fit. You know, sometimes, you know, we get good stories, but they're just not a fit, you
right.
know? And I know that happens with a lot of journals. So a lot of publishing is really research, you know, to get published so that you're not wasting your time submitting to places that aren't publishing your type of work, you
right.
know? So it's worth it to get a copy and look at it and see what kind of stuff we have in there and what kind of, you know, themes and things like that are represented. But first and foremost, work on the writing and make it as polished as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to your own work and your own writing, how has language and culture impacted your work?
You know, it has impacted my work to a great degree, but not necessarily consciously, you know. And I'll give you an example with my book, Confetti Girl. You know, I was writing this book about a girl who, you know, she lost her mother and she feels like she's losing her dad because he's always in books. He's never reading. And, you know, and that was a story I was exploring. It's like, how is this girl going to deal with this grief, you know? So I'm writing a story and I do the best I can and I start submitting it. And when I submitted it to the people in New York, they were very fascinated by cascarones because the book has cascarones in it.
Yes.
They didn't know what they were, you know? What are these?
It was a different world for them.
It was a completely different world for them. And, you know, when I was writing the book, I didn't think about that, you know, because it's such an integral part of my world. I was living in San Antonio at the time. And during Fiesta, on every street corner, people were selling cascarones. And I'm like, man, they must eat a lot of eggs to collect all these eggshells. And I like that detail. And at first, it was just kind of a visual detail. But as I kept writing the book, I realized that there was a lot of rich resonance with that, with the idea of this fragile egg that breaks, but it's still beautiful. And those kinds of symbols, they hopefully arise organically. But in New York, they were just fascinated by these cascarones.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's why I sold the book. Because, you know, when they think about, like, Mexican-American literature, they think about tortillas, and they, you know, and they think about, I guess, migrant farm workers and those kind of traditional images. But this was like a new image. And so I really think that went a long way to helping me sell the book. And it's part of the cover. They got confetti on the book. It's called Confetti Girl. And so, yeah, culture. But, you know, but I guess what I'm trying to say is it's around me. And it's around me so much that I don't really see it. But it's part of the fabric.
Right.
And I don't really notice it until somebody else points it out. And that's how it works in my book. I mean, there's no way to escape it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not really deliberately trying to bring in the details. I don't have to deliberately try to bring them in because they'll just be there.
Right, it's natural.
Because that's how they are in my life.
Mm-hmm. Well, Deanna, is there a writing exercise that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yes, and this is one that I mentioned in my Writer's Digest article for people who want to feel young again and capture that young voice and maybe write for those younger readers. I recommend doing something that you've never done before. Some of the ideas I have is, you know, go to a restaurant and order the food that you've never ordered before, or put on clothes that are the complete opposite of how you normally dress, you know, and go in public and live in that new skin for a while and feel awkward and feel, you know, what you're trying to do is recapture that sense of newness that young people feel, that sense of inexperience. If you've never danced ballroom dancing, go learn some ballroom dancing so that you feel clumsy again. And then write about it and see what kind of surprises and emotions that come out of that experience.
Nice idea to go back and feel clumsy and like you said, something out of the ordinary.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We've been talking to writer Diana Lopez, who joined us today via a telephone interview from Victoria, Texas. We want to point out that Diana teaches at the University of Houston, Victoria, and is the author of several novels, some of them award-winnings as well, and some of her short fiction has appeared in several anthologies and other publications. Thank you, Diana, for joining us today.
And thank you for having me.
You are listening to Corazón Bilingüe. We invite you to join us again as we continue our conversation on language, culture, and the art of poetry. Los invitamos que nos acompañen de nuevo, mientras que sigamos explorando la dinámica del lenguaje, la cultura y la creación poética. If you would like to hear more, visit us at www.corazonbilingue.com. Gracias por acompañarnos.